Meditators, welcome to another episode of the Market Meditations podcast. Today we have a special guest with us, JD Gagnon. I think I pronounced that right. Co-founder of Rome Blockchain Labs and Benki, currently the largest project by total value locked within the Avalanche ecosystem, supplying over $2 billion of assets within 2 weeks of launch. Given JD's experience, I'm looking forward to diving into how everyone can benefit from the Avalanche ecosystem, Benki, explore DeFi as a whole, and welcome, JD.
Thanks a lot, my friend. Happy to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And I thought I'd start with how you got involved in DeFi specifically, because you've been around DeFi for a number of years. You probably saw it when it really started to kick off, and you've seen it evolve over time. What insights have you gained seeing it from that early inception stage all the way over to where it is right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, initially the reason I got into crypto in the first place was probably like most people. It was novel. It was interesting. You know, I started watching Bitcoin in 2013, 2014, wondering what on earth is going on. There was people all over the place investing. And I was in traditional finance at the time. And I kind of thought, holy cow, this, you know, this is way out there. And we had clients asking about it. And so we did some digging, and I thought, wow, this really could change the way that society, you know, manages finance. And it's kind of a stretch for a lot of people to think, how does Bitcoin lead to the future of finance? And I think it was more just what the tech signaled, to me anyways. It was saying, you know, that there are ways to do very decentralized, very secure, borderless transactions instantaneously, where you can have a lot more kind of liberation over your assets and a lot more sovereignty over your finances. And so as probably most people at the time, I just thought, holy cow, like this could be cool. Let's watch it for a bit. Came in a couple of years later, in a bit more meaningful way, decided to lose some money trading like most people to get used to the space and do it with some skin in the game. And as things evolved, you know, there were some really cool projects being built in, or at least concepts being built in 2016, 2017. Then, of course, we had the ICO craze where a lot of crap was being built. I think it slowed the space down a little bit. But at the same time, you know, it brought a lot of new money in, brought a lot of new interest. And, you know, DeFi started to evolve and it started to turn into this like, hey, how can we actually replicate or build things on the blockchain that you can actually function in many ways that you would otherwise have to do in your local financial institutions. And so, I mean, we have a long way to go, obviously. There's a lot of exciting things yet to be built. There's a lot of things in their infancy that you know, teams are working a lot on making better. But it's really exciting. We've had an inside look. We've been along for the ride for a while. And it's amazing. It's, you know, society is really seeing a transformative shift, and I couldn't be more excited to be a part of it.
So as early as 2016, 2017, these DeFi ideas were starting to be explored. The people were starting to build the base layers of what it is today.
Yeah, I think a lot of projects were beginning, at least in their ideation, in 16, 17. Again, when you're building a novel technology, I mean, you're starting from scratch. So you're seeing, I invested in BZX in, I think, early 2018. And then we waited 2.5 years for BZX to even, you know, launch and release the token. And then they've had their own challenges. Amazing team at BZX. But it was something I followed closely. There's, you know, Aave and Compound and so many other DeFi protocols that we're building. Some have now come and gone. You know, unfortunately, they had challenges or team issues, which is with most industries, many businesses come and go. But yeah, there's been a lot of work that's happening. It's totally different. It was totally different back then because they're writing code from scratch. They have no, you know, there's no context. There's no comparative smart contracts to look at. And so, you know, you really have to give credit to the Stannies and the Leshners of the world, Aave and Compound, that, you know, really built something from nothing. And it's pretty amazing to see how that's evolved and allowed protocols like us to continue to build on those visions and to take the lessons that they've learned and add to them. It's been a lot of fun.
It certainly pioneered the space and pushed it to where it is today, and allowed for amazing projects like Benki to come around. And I definitely do want to get on and talk about it. But before I do again, you got in extremely early, and what you also got to see is Ethereum was obviously the first place where DeFi was beginning to explode and develop, and now we've got multiple other chains in which DeFi is starting to get significant amounts of TVL and activity. Do you think DeFi in the end is going to end up on one chain, multiple chains? Is there a place for every chain? Is there a need for every chain? Where do you lie on that front?
It's a great question. I believe in a multi-chain future. So I believe that, you know, right now, most of these, most of the L1s are kind of trying to figure out where they fit. I think if you talk to the founders of the layer ones, they all have a very solid idea, but the market is trying to figure out, and developers are trying to figure out, you know, which L1s are better for certain functions. Right now you're seeing kind of, I call it the circus of liquidity mining, because all the L1s are just offering liquidity mining to different protocols, and you're seeing a lot of protocols go to different platforms to take advantage of it. But I believe that there's going to be some focus as time goes on of each layer one into a different niche, into a different subset of functionalities, including blockchain. And I don't believe there's an ETH killer. I don't believe ETH is going to die. I don't believe, you know, one blockchain is superior in all ways to all others. I mean, I am a bit of a maximalist by nature, but, you know, my actual belief system suggests that, you know, I think there's many L1s that will exist, and each one will kind of evolve slightly into an area of focus, I think, where it excels. And yeah, I think we have a really amazing future ahead of us, and we're just barely seeing the beginning of it.
What do you mean you're a maximalist by nature? In what ways are you a maximalist?
So, I mean, bias, you know, transparent here. You know, I do believe, for at least my purposes, what I'm focused on, where we're building at least Benki, I do believe Avalanche is, you know, the blockchain that is built, probably most geared towards financial products, and financial, DeFi development. But I'm biased. I'm building here. You know, we were the first mover. We've done a lot of work with Avalabs, who has been amazing. We've received multiple grants for multiple projects. But I do believe in, you know, the scalability and the ability for Avalanche to really build an enterprise ready ecosystem. Excuse me. Enterprise ready ecosystem and institutional grade subnet infrastructure. And I think from a financial perspective, from strictly financial products on the blockchain, I think Avalanche really has a technology foundation that will change how we view finances going forward. For that reason, I'm a maximalist.
That's a very fair and self-aware answer. Appreciate it. So in what ways would you say Avalanche has an edge over, like, why would you guys pick Avalanche over something like Solana, which a lot of people argue is fantastic for DeFi, or just Ethereum as well? What made you guys decide that Avalanche is the place to go?
Yeah, and again, you know, admitting a bias, I do believe that Avalanche is a superior tech. I probably don't want to spend a ton of time, you know, A versus B, because I think Solana has a very bright future. I do believe that there's an area of the market that Solana serves incredibly well. And I believe they have a lot of institutional support, a lot of mind share from the community. And I think Solana will be wildly successful. Now, why I'm choosing to build currently on Avalanche is mainly due to the fact that, again, it's really focused on institutional adoption. And so the technology, it is a novel consensus model. And what's really interesting about the way Avalanche runs is it actually becomes more decentralized and more efficient as it gets bigger. It's not the opposite. It actually becomes more effective as the network grows. And it becomes more decentralized as the network grows. It's very simple to build custom virtual machines, custom subnets, which is critical, I think, for institutional adoption, especially in regulated environments, which we'll probably talk about later. That's another reason why I'm an Avalanche Maxi, because it has a unique edge from a regulatory perspective that is critically important to Benki. But yeah, I mean, it's geared towards individual subnets. It's geared towards building very novel technologies on the consensus mechanism and fulfillment of Avalanche. And it's very fast. It's very lightweight. Running nodes is very simple. Building infrastructure on Avalanche is relatively simple. It's just amazing, and it scales. I hate to use the word infinitely, but it scales at a very, very fast pace and becomes more efficient. And a lot of the freedoms in the way that the consensus works, a lot of the freedoms in the way that the technology works, I believe is just geared heavily towards institutional enterprise adoption, which I think is interesting. I think once we can start bringing massive incumbent businesses from traditional, traditional finance, traditional technology onto the blockchain, that's really where we see that kind of inflection point of adoption and usability for people globally. And it's really amazing to see that happening right in front of our eyes. It's really a cool thing to see.
It truly is. And I want to caveat that I am also very multi-chain and a multi-chain maximalist. I think there's pros and cons to every single one. So this certainly isn't A is better than B, but rather what advantages does A have over B that has made you go to A, which I think you've highlighted very nicely. And I've now heard that great Avalanche argument. I want to get more involved in the ecosystem. I'm an absolute beginner. Where do I start?
I think I would probably just go through the Avalanche documentation, go to Avalanche Medium. Avalanche Medium has some amazing articles pretty much on every partnership they have, every ecosystem project. They're quick little articles that explain different things. There's quite a few Avalanche ecosystem pages, people that have created websites to track projects and different things. You can go to DeFi Llama, at least if you're into DeFi, and see, who's currently live, what they're doing from a DeFi perspective. You can go to the ecosystem pages on CoinMarketCap and the like. But that's kind of where I would start, honestly, is trying to just get a high-level understanding of what types of projects are building on Avalanche. What's interesting about Avalanche is we're seeing, because it's an EVM right now, Ethereum virtual machine on the C chain, you're seeing kind of two types of projects building on Avalanche. One, new projects that are taking what has existed or building something completely novel and making it a little bit better. And then you're seeing a lot of projects now starting to come from the Ethereum ecosystem and other EVM ecosystems coming into Avalanche. So you're really seeing a good mix of the things you know and the things you don't. And I think we're better off in the ecosystem as a consequence of that. You're seeing new kind of developments, and you're seeing new visions on old developments, and then you're seeing some of the incumbents come over. And I think it's very interesting for competitive environment and just for the health of an ecosystem. Yeah. But I would go to the Avalanche Medium. Avalanche Medium is such a great place to start. The Avalabs website has a lot of information, just about the protocol itself, the blockchain itself.
Yeah, we'll make sure to leave links in the description below for anyone who wants to explore that further. And I think this is a perfect opportunity to ask, so what is Benki and where does Benki lie in that spectrum?
Yeah, so Benki in its current iteration is a lending protocol, money market, deposit your assets, gain some interest, so to speak, on your assets for depositing them. People can borrow assets using their own assets as collateral, and it acts kind of like a bank. You pay a cost, a yield, or an interest rate then for borrowing assets. That's like the very primitive understanding of how it works. It's kind of like how banking was before we had fractional reserve banking, and it's how it was intended, once upon a time, so to speak. You came to a bank, it was supposed to be relatively trustless. If you provided collateral, you could borrow money against your collateral. There wasn't a whole lot of questions. And away you went. And the interest rates, the yield, what you received for your deposits and what you paid for your borrows was driven entirely by markets. It was driven by market forces. So the more demand there is for assets, the greater the cost. And the more deposits there are, the lower the yield for deposits. It's very market driven. So it's algorithmic in the sense that all of it is run through rules and code that determines how the yields and the rate curves are built. But it's intended to be, you know, trustless. It's intended to be, if you want to borrow against your collateral, you come within actually a few seconds, you can borrow money and do whatever the heck you want with it. What's really interesting, of course, is that everything is real time. What the banks couldn't do once upon a time was liquidate your collateral instantly if they had to. If your loan went sideways, you know, then they had to come find you and, you know, steal your camels or your goats or whatever it was that you put up as collateral and try to, you know, figure out how to sell them. In this case, it's instant. It's very trustless. It's currently permissionless. Anybody can use it. Just having a MetaMask or a Coin98 or different types of wallets that we support. And that's kind of the current iteration. I don't know if you have time, but I've got about 45 minutes to explain the whole thing. I'm kidding. So the actual focus of Benki just for this first kind of phase of our launch has really been just to provide that foundational piece of DeFi for Avalanche. We worked with the Avalanche team a long time ago, talking about how lending protocols generally precede most other DeFi. Without lending, it's very difficult to build DeFi on top of it. And so, you know, we've been waiting for all the puzzle pieces to be in place. We've had the protocol ready for quite some time. And when the new bridge was up and Chainlink was live and we were ready from a security perspective, we launched the lending protocol. And so the first goal was to get to critical mass, but the actual vision of Benki is actually to build a DeFi platform of DeFi primitives. The reason that, you know, we want to launch multiple primitives on one platform. Portfolio management traditionally requires many different ways to establish a yield curve. So what happens in certain environments? How do you hedge your assets in different ways? And our goal is to build a platform offering opportunities and options for portfolio development. So you'll see in the very near future, we're launching a couple of more interesting primitives that give different you know, different vectors of yield, different ways to hedge, different ways to build portfolios. And in the next quarter or so, we will launch some other major primitives. And I think it'll be very exciting to see how that all comes together. With the ultimate goal, and we've said this actually since the beginning, of building a regulated subnet. So our goal isn't to say, how can we shield our operations from the regulators and from, you know, compliance and all of those things, but rather let's put our head in the mouth of the lion and say, you know, regulation isn't going away. So let's figure out how we can build under a regulated environment. Let's, you know, make sure we have a seat at the table for those discussions, make sure we understand what is and what is to come and to be a part of that. And so that's the goal of building a regulated subnet. We can talk about why Avalanche makes that a little bit easier. But again, our focus is institutional adoption, and the DeFi platform of DeFi primitives is incredibly important. Once we hit critical mass of regulatory compliance, you know, those relationships, those pipes, the connections to the traditional institutions become very critical, because there's a lot of due diligence. There's a lot of things that they have to do to be able to use your platform. But once they can, if you have multiple products, it really opens up the opportunity for them to manage portfolios and to do a lot of great things. So that's kind of the 5 minute, what is Benki? I don't know. If you have any questions, feel free to ask more.
I've got like six questions to follow up on that, but I'm going to try pick what I think is the most interesting one. And that is, so the last point you mentioned from a regulatory perspective, the approach you're taking is very interesting. A lot of companies just like to launch in jurisdictions where it's very easy to operate and then not have to deal with that and try and go forward as in a safer way as possible. I know you've been an entrepreneur for a long time, and there's definitely an entrepreneurial mindset going into these decisions, and I'm trying to look at it through that lens. If you're working with the regulators, then that's like a high-risk play where it works out and you guys go forward together and it explodes, you're safe, sustainable, and the business continues to going. But if you run into a wall, then that could be a major issue that could instantly end everything, because there's no hiding, there's no operating in gray area, you'll hit black straight away.
Yeah, a really good question. And we've been asked this before, and I think it's an interesting, we've been asked if we think that the regulators are going to be kingmakers, in the sense that, you know, there's only a few protocols, the ones that engage them from the beginning, that will become successful. And I think that's not the case. I think regulation, hopefully, will come in stages. I think, although right now it feels like, you know, the market is pretty pretty concerned, a little nervous about the regulatory forces. And it feels like every small regulatory decision is being completely blown out of proportion, right? You know, we have the 500th China FUD right now in the last few years, if you've been following the space. So there's always a China FUD. China bans Bitcoin for the 4,000th time. Okay. And everybody overreacts and everybody takes it, you know, to some great, you know, end that probably doesn't exist. China maybe notwithstanding. But as far as most other regulatory environments, I do believe that it will happen somewhat slowly. You know, from the regulators and associations we speak to, you know, DeFi regulation really is the number one concern for most global regulators right now. How on earth do we assess and regulate this environment without stifling, you know, innovation, without disrupting, you know, economic growth in an emerging sector? They're probably going to mess it up in many ways from our perspective, but it's not going to be a king-making environment in the sense that we think Bankey will be the only one that will succeed. And like you said, we're also not the only one under the microscope. Our view, at least till now, has been that regulators are looking for kind of best efforts. Regulators are looking for protocols. You know, the low-hanging fruit is the alternative to the best efforts, the people that are blatantly disregarding regulation or disregarding what rules should be easy to apply to DeFi. There's not many of them. So as long as you say, what are the rules that probably apply to DeFi already? Let's not break those blatantly. And then let's work with the regulators to, you know, to try to understand what's coming down in front of us, and maybe to have some influence on policy and on compliance and so on. So yeah, it's a good point. You know, it probably does expose us a little bit. I mean, at least they know that we exist, but we have $2.5 billion in deposits right now. They know we exist. you know, like it, we're not flying under the radar anymore. So I think instead of, again, turning and hoping they don't see us while we're standing in broad daylight, I think we might as well engage the conversation and try to have some positive influence over it. Not necessarily lobbying for lobbying's sake, but more trying to be a part of the conversation, because at least in my opinion, although the space loves to say regulators are just trying to crap on us, they're really not. I think as a overarching rule, they're trying to understand, how do we regulate this in a way that protects investors without ruining the, you know, economic growth in our jurisdiction? And they're probably going to make some missteps, arguably, from at least from our perspective, as DeFi users, but there's no avoiding it. I mean, it's happening whether we like it or not. So our view is, let's be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, 100%. And there's, like, I don't want to say 100% we need regulators, but I can 100% say that there are some very strong arguments for why regulation is necessary. So to just disregard it entirely and take the very crypto stance of regulation bad, give us complete freedom to do whatever the hell we want, might not be the perfect outcome. And I love the approach Bankey's taking. I do wish for it to be highly successful. JD, we've got so much more I want to cover, but we're running low on time. Should we enter a quick fire round where I just pose some of the more interesting questions and you give me your quick fire answers, and we get through a nice chunk through this last part of the episode?
I'll do my absolute best. I'm not sure I'm good at quick answers, but we can try.
So does Banky have plans to expand to other chains?
We don't have imminent plans. We're definitely open to it at some point in the future if the use case presents itself. Currently, under the current environment, no. But there is environments where multi-chain expansion would exist. So
you're not closed off to the idea, but it could definitely happen at some point should it be beneficial. Next question would be, so you've been to 2016, 2017, you've seen DeFi, you've seen it evolve until now. Over the next 5 to 10 years, what are you most excited about that's going to develop in the DeFi space that either already exists and is just going to grow or doesn't exist yet?
That's a loaded question because we haven't talked about Rome Blockchain Labs. But, you know, I think, what I'm most excited about and probably the biggest area of opportunity is user experience. And that's going to sound weird to most people that aren't building in the space. But I think what the next large momentous shift is going to be in an increase in user experience. And right now, it's still, although people that have been playing in the space for a while, it's complicated, but we get it. We find a way to navigate. But probably the biggest barrier, biggest opportunity is the user experience across the board, not just individual dApps, but you know, interoperability, composability, all of those things between networks, to and from centralized exchanges, on off ramps. The user experience, I think, is I'm most excited about because it's speaking to other platforms and builders, it's the number one focus. How do we make this easier, more intuitive, less friction for the user? Excited about that.
I know I said quickfire, but I have to follow up there. It's everything. It really is everything. Because like, if we want DeFi to take over and replace this system, like I've been here 5 years now, and I still triple, double check my address, and part of me doesn't know if this transaction's got to go through to the right place. We can't have that. We can't even have that 0.1% chance. We need to get to that absolute comfort, and UI is the only way. We need to make it easy to use, easy to operate.
I think eventually what you'll see... and you know what a lot of larger participants are suggesting is that the world when blockchain really changes society is when you're using websites, when you're using user interfaces, and you actually don't know you're using the blockchain. You don't know you're using Web3. You're just functioning as per usual. It seems easy. It seems cost-effective. It seems highly secure. But you don't realize that you're in fact using something quite complex and kind of scary. And I think in the next 3 to 5 years, that's probably what we'll see. We'll probably see a version of, composability and interoperability that doesn't feel like that. It feels like you're just going about your activities in DeFi and you have no idea. Not no idea, that's but you have no frustration with the fact that it's complex and confusing underneath the hood.
That is really exciting that everyone we know will slowly start to use this technology that we've been shouting off the rooftops about, and they won't even know it, but you know they'll know, but it'll feel exactly the same. So next question on Banky, Avalanche, and maybe even other protocols on Avalanche. What sort of yields can people expect on stablecoins and other assets right now on Avalanche?
Yeah, good question. It really depends on liquidity mining. So liquidity mining is kind of an interesting environment, right? It's the way that layer ones are trying to compete. It's the way that new protocols are trying to attract locked value. But at some point, that music will stop. And I think what I'm also most excited about is when the protocols start to stand on their own without, you know, emitting tokens, without the layer ones providing liquidity mining assets we've been the recipient of it. I love it. We're emitting tokens. We have liquidity mining on our platform because it's how you remain competitive. There's some cases on Banky now where you can get close to double digit yields on your assets. There's some strategies that you can employ to get greater yields on your assets using recursive lending and different things. There's some institutional partners that we have that are custody partners that manage assets for hedge funds and high net worth individuals and so on. They have strategies on our protocols on Banky that's, you know, 17, 18, 19% per year. I mean, you can provide liquidity for Banky. I think we're at about 190.
JD, sorry to interrupt. You said those strategies you can use to earn more than regular yields. Could you list them out so the listeners can go research them themselves, just the names of them?
Yeah, we're really not supposed to encourage certain strategies. So I kind of, if somebody wants to rewind a little bit, I think I dropped it a bit of a hint. It's really not rocket science. If you understand, if you just look at the protocol for a while, you can move assets around in unique ways. There's some yield aggregators that are built on top of Banky, Yield Yak, Snowball, and there's some others that take then the yield that you're earning from your assets and they compound it in different ways and they do different things. Maxi is another platform that we know fairly well that does some unique things there that compounds your assets. But anyways, yields, I think you'll find that yields, once everything kind of sorts itself out, you'll probably get multiple percent on your deposits, then you'll have, multiple percent on your borrows, which functions really well, really efficiently, and is, orders of magnitude larger than what you're getting in traditional finance right now for just idle assets. But I think what lending protocols in particular offer that's as important or more important than straight yield is the opportunity to free up capital and do proper tax planning and to, portfolio manage, to risk manage. You can hedge a lot of ways using lending and borrowing. And it really creates an environment now where you can have wealth on the blockchain in crypto and you can manage it in a way that is predictable and programmatic. And so it's not necessarily, in my opinion, just about, yield. I mean, yield is important. Locked value is fleeting based on yield right now, because if there's greater yield over here and the relative risk is the same, I mean, where are you going to go? But eventually it'll come down to which platforms I think are have more integrations, have more opportunities, more options for hedging and risk management and portfolio development. And that's why Banky's building a platform as opposed to one product.
Yeah, it's really, really important to highlight outside of yield what sort of opportunity there is. I know a lot of people do their tax planning by taking out loans against their assets instead of actually selling them. And you can make a lot more than a 10% yield by optimizing that. And it's highly overlooked because it's difficult for people to talk about because there's legal ramifications and all sorts. But another rabbit hole for people to dive down into if they're interested. Last question, and we've gone a little over, but it doesn't matter. I have to ask this one and take as much time as you need with this answer. Sure. You've started a number of companies from Scotch and Ramen Media to a number of real estate firms. Now you're with Rome Blockchain Labs, Banky, a highly successful entrepreneur. And I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this podcast. What are the most important lessons you would like them to take away from your experience and success?
Do you have a few hours? Because it might take a minute. I think I have more lessons than I have successes, which is usually the case. But I think ultimately in almost every business, it comes down to relationships. That most of the amazing opportunities we have with Rome Blockchain Labs and Banky all started with relationships, becoming a part of a community before the community was exploded. I mean, we were a part of the Avalanche community when it was just a twinkle in Kevin's eye and Goon's eye. I'm kind of kidding. But, we spent a lot of time nurturing relationships and getting to know people, getting to know builders, trying to understand challenges, trying to understand opportunities. And most major wins, most major inflection points in my entire career, for everything we've done from traditional finance to real estate to media and PR. We had an accelerator into the US government, tons of different things that we've done, raising money, regulated funds in the US, has really, every major inflection point has come down to a relationship of some sort. And in the blockchain space, it seems like a big space from the outside, but it's very small. There's very it's a very supportive, a very collaborative. I mean, you see on crypto Twitter, you know, the ETH guys versus the Solana guys and the Bitcoin guys versus the ETH guys. And that's actually just a subset. That's just crypto Twitter. But, you know, from a building perspective, it is insanely collaborative. I mean, we have calls all day, every day with incredibly successful teams. And we talk with the founding members and we come up with ideas and we brainstorm and how can we work together? And hey, you guys are doing this. Have you thought of this? Because that would be amazing. And it would really support us in this way. And most of the best ideas come from that, come from those types of things, conversations, brainstorming sessions, whiteboards on Zoom with people you've never met in real life. That would be my absolute advice is just start to engage people. I mean, and you'll find, especially in crypto, that if you kind of lead with a genuine interest in supporting a project, if you lead with a genuine interest in getting to know people and getting to know the space, it's definitely recognized. I mean, the way to do this wrong, in my opinion, is to go and, you know, try to make wildly aggressive comments in different Telegram channels and try to sound like the smartest guy in the room. And, or you see people saying, hey, I've been in crypto for 6 minutes. I'd like to be your community manager. Will you pay me? No. How about you just contribute in a meaningful way, get to know people. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing how quick your relationship kind of circle of influence will grow. And it leads to amazing opportunities. It really does. I know you were probably looking for like some more nuggets of like, do this and get this. But the reality is, you know, just get engaged and make meaningful connections with people and things will explode beyond your imagination, really.
JD, I want to emphasize how much I was not expecting do this and get this, because that's what everyone wants. Everyone right. wants to hear, go do this and you'll buy this coin and it'll go up 10x and you retire there. But the thing is, like, long-term success does not come from any one event. That's why the macro process is so much more important. It's about what you repeatedly do over time that carves your path and sends you off in the right direction. And I cannot tell you how many success stories in crypto that people have gone from nothing to building what most people retire with started with, I just went to this community, I gave and expected nothing in return, and the rest just happened. I know it sounds too good to be true, but you hear it time and time again on this podcast. Maybe there is some truth to it. Maybe if you just go out and give that value, engage in the right places, make the right relationships, you could see some success from it as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, JD. This has been incredible. Meditators, that is all from us. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'd love to have you on again, JD. I'm so bullish on you, and therefore whatever you are building. You're lovely. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye, everyone.